Nordic Sustainable Economy Podcast Series, delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers.
Very welcome, everyone, to Economy in Green Transition, a podcast in the series Nordic Sustainable Economy, delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers. In this podcast, we will discuss what a green and resilient economy would look like and how to achieve that. Is bioeconomy and circular economy the answer? Which policy innovations are needed? And how can we stir more engagement for change and learn from our Nordic Baltic neighbors? My name is Åsa Ström Hildestrand. I'm head of communications at Nordregio, Nordic Research Center for Regional Development. And I'm your host today. And with me, I have two very distinguished guests. Mr. Taavi Rõivas, entrepreneur and former Prime Minister of Estonia, and Jyrki Katainen, President of Sitra, Finland's Fund for the Future, and former Prime Minister and Finance Minister of Finland. So, really looking forward to this discussion. First of all, setting the scene, what would a green and resilient economy look like? The climate and biodiversity crisis echoes globally, and the culprit is really the type of economy that we have. It doesn't fit into the boundaries of the ecosystems on Earth. Yet the same economy that is now devastating the planet is also depending on the ecosystems. So even if we know what's wrong, are we ready and willing to fix it? And what is the way forward? What can circular and bioeconomy deliver? First of all, dear guests, I would like for you to reflect on the following. What would a green and resilient economy look like? And why are you engaged in this issue? How do you see your role? Who wants to start? Taavi, perhaps you go first.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's kind of self-evident that this cannot go on forever, that the economy is ever growing, the consumption is ever growing, and nothing really happens. Something has to happen. And I don't think it is realistic, or at least easy, to change the way people live in terms of living standard, even though that's also a serious topic, of course, to consider, because the consumption of consumer goods is sometimes very wasteful, traveling is sometimes very wasteful, and so forth. But I think it is possible and much more realistic to achieve while still maintaining at least most of your living standard, achieving the fact that you waste less, you consume less in terms of not renewable resources. And this is actually, if you come to the question, why are we dealing with this? I think we don't have a choice. We simply have to, because this simply cannot go on forever like that. And it is mainly, of course, also why our generation is dealing with it, is mainly because the economic growth and the growth of the consumption has accelerated to this extent that that we do understand now that that the limits are not that far, and we need to act. And if we talk to our kids, in my case, my oldest child is 12. It's the best way to understand that the new generation takes it super seriously, because they are very much interested whether there will be sustainable future for them to be adults as well. And and anyone who has kids and is responsible, of course, deals with this matter.
And how do you see your role specifically? You're now an entrepreneur. The business sector has a big role.
Yes, well, we are. I'm currently working as chairman of Alvetech, which is an Estonian tech company developing and producing last mile shuttles to reduce the number of personal cars. So basically, it can act as extension of public transport, the means to get more people to use public transport. And of course, all of our shuttles are running on electricity, but also this is the first time to say it out publicly, by the way, but on 5th of July, we will launch the first ever autonomous shuttle in the world that will run on hydrogen. That's also a topic to be discussed. So we will work intensively to make the world a greener place. And public transport or transport as such is one of the sectors that needs to be addressed alongside with housing and energy production and all of that.
Thank you, Tavi. Jyrki, over to you. How do you see your role, Sitra's role maybe, for this green and resilient economy?
Yeah, Sitra is the Finnish Innovation Fund, and we call ourselves as Think, Do and Connect Tank. So we do partially classic think tank stuff, but almost 50% of our annual 30 million euros budget goes to experimentations and pilot projects with the private sector, but also with municipalities and other public authorities. So we mostly concentrate on solutions, how we could reduce significantly our everyday lives' carbon footprint. Sitra actually initiated or brought the concept of circular economy to Finland. And I'm happy to say that the generations or leaders before I joined Sitra had created had done so good work that today Sitra is known as some sort of international authority in the fields of circular economy. So circular economy is obviously one of our main tasks, which we want to promote and devise new ways to promote and use this business model. The second and a little bit newer thing is biodiversity. We want to combine nature loss topic to economy. So in other words, we want to decouple GDP growth from biodiversity loss. And on the contrary, we want to combine market economy to biodiversity so that market economy would start producing more nature. Mm. It is a relatively new thing, even though the scientists have provided facts on nature loss for decades, but we have not cared. I can raise my hand. I'm one of those who have not cared enough about biodiversity loss. But now we are reaching the boundaries that if you don't do something serious and systemic change, we will hit the wall, and it will have very bad negative consequences to our economy, but to our health, to our society, etc. So we have seen positive development happening in climate change area. Companies have taken that seriously. They are reducing their carbon footprint. They are changing the business models. For instance, I just heard the news or read news from the daily newspaper Helsingin Sanoma that there are a number of CEOs in publicly listed Finnish companies who have been given a new incentive program, which includes both carbon footprint reduction targets, but also other nature-based incentives. So the CEOs cannot achieve full compensation unless they meet these targets. So I find my role as a developer of new market-based approaches and systems to reduce nature loss and improve circular economy.
Mm. That's an important role for this century, for sure. And to just dig a little deeper into this concept of the green and resilient economy, obviously, I mean, you raised the key issues here of this combination of that we need an economy that also provides saves the ecosystems, but also delivers more of them, hopefully. But another question that has been raised is, can the circular economy grow forever? Or should we do more to try and leave this growth paradigm entirely. What would you say about that? What are your thoughts?
If I can start, I have not seen any seriously built models of society, of welfare society, where economy shouldn't grow. Mm. So as long as the salaries are paid in money, and teachers and nurses and doctors must pay salary in money, we need some sort of a growth. So I believe that we need economic growth, GDP growth also in the future. But the question is, what is the quality of the road of growth? Mm. And this is the biggest issue. I'm pretty certain that it's doable to do a systemic change to market mechanism we have. During last 100 years, we have developed the economy and market, which has risen hundreds of millions of people from poverty, which has increased significantly our well-being, wealth, and we have given lots of social values to economy. For instance, all the workers have their annual vacation and the work conditions must be decent, etc. But we have not given enough environmental values to economy. And if you look at the market economy, it's like a skeleton. It doesn't have any values itself. It only have features. And human beings or politicians gives the values to this market mechanism. And now we have to look carefully what kind of values we should give to this market mechanism that it start producing better results. Mm. Apart from social and well-being results, how it could produce more sustainable, environmentally sustainable outcomes. And this is doable. I worked as a vice president of European Commission, and one of my tasks was to create new markets for circular economy. And it opened up my mind that through market mechanism, through market regulation, we can keep economy growing, but the output is more sustainable. Mm.
We'll come back to that with the next question or the next section in this program when we talk about policy innovation. So be happy to hear more examples then as well. Tavi, from your perspective, do you think the circular economy can grow forever? Or what is the discussion in Estonia around this concept?
Well, I don't think, again, that we have a choice telling the global population that, this is it, there is no economic growth, and get used to that. This is simply not going to happen, and it's not even possible, because objectively, there are many people in the world globally who are in objective poverty, and there has to be some solution for them. So even, here in the Nordics, in theory, we can discuss like whether we need higher GDP for Finland or Estonia, but there are definitely big parts of the world that need, and also I agree with Jyrki that also in Estonia or Finland, it's not possible to tell the people that your living standard is not going to improve. But of course, what can happen is the definition of well-being, definition of wealth, definition of, what's a good car? Does it need to have a big engine of the, 60s, where the larger V8 you had is better? One example that came to my mind, I think what is changing as we speak, there was yesterday in Estonian parliament, it was banned to grow animals for fur purposes in Estonia. Mm. And that's something that, in a couple of decades has dramatically changed. It used to be a status symbol to have a fur coat, whereas now it's like most people don't want to go out with a fur coat because people get mad at them, and probably rightfully so. So, I mean, this kind of definitions of what we need to consume in order to feel good, I think it will be changing, and it is already visible that it's no longer cool to consume irresponsibly, and that's, I think, our children's generation will be even more focused on that. I think the next generation is our main hope, let's put it this way.
Thank you so much, Tavi. So if we now move over and dig even deeper into the policy innovation and the incentives needed for a greener economy. Both of you already raised certain issues here that are already happening, and that it's probably through, since we are still a market economy, right? We're part of one of the biggest economies in the world, in the European Union. The growth factor is there, but how do we make this economy work for nature instead? So, I mean, and we see now the change, but still in many economies in the world, specifically developing countries, economy could still be seen as a separate domain from the environment. So the big issue is obviously, how do we reconnect our economy with its resource base, right? With the biodiversity that everything is depending on. And from your experiences, and both of you have obviously very lots of experience in policy development as well, how could we design these holistic financial policies that would promote a more sustainable or circular economy and climate neutrality? What would be some prime examples that you've seen from Estonia and Finland in terms of smart regulations or circular public procurement? Or what do you see as the major ways forward to make the financial policies work for green transition?
Well, if I may start, I think both European Commission and the national governments have a big role in this. And as a liberal, you know, saying that sounds a bit funny, but I do believe that that doing things together at government level is a key in this. And I think it is quite obvious that there is a stick and carrot approach. First of all, of course, regulations. We know that the car makers, for example, need to get their engines smaller, otherwise there will be penalties. Also, we know that any new house that is constructed in Finland or Estonia needs to be at very high level or very low level of energy consumption, let's put it this way. And also the financial incentives by European Commission and various governments are important. We already have the charging networks that started mainly from public input. I think we need something similar with hydrogen as well to get things going, and then it will work in market terms. And also, I think the EU support, and we know that the Commission has taken a very serious lead, both policy-wise, but also funds-wise, to get these things happening. This financial support will actually help a lot. But of course, it's also fair to say that there are all very different countries in the world. And whereas the current European Commission and current US administration are very much focusing on the topic, this is not the whole story globally. And the biggest concern to me personally is how to get the rest of the world and those countries who don't think this is an issue to work with us as well, because we cannot get very, very good job done in only one corner of the world. It's a global problem, after all.
Thank you, Tavi. Definitely on target there, that everyone needs to be on board to make this change happen. So Jyrki, over to you. You already mentioned what you see inside some of Finland's greatest, biggest companies, that the programs for bonuses, etc., are actually changing and in a greener direction. So what else would you like to highlight, and perhaps something that you started developing already when you were Minister of Finance, and sort of the change that you're seeing? What would you see are the biggest or the best ways forward right now?
Well, actually, the biggest achievement in personal level, if I can say so, is the work what I did in the European Commission. As I already mentioned, that I was one of those who were designing and promoting circular economy in the EU. So Tavi already mentioned many good examples what public authorities can do and what public sector can do. I would like to add one thing. Actually, Tavi also mentioned this, and it's a market regulation. I'm mostly interested in market regulation, and not because I'm anti-market person, just the contrary, because I'm pro-market person.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I want to develop market so that it creates new incentives for businesses which are changing their business models to become more sustainable. I just give you a couple of examples from the European legislation. We have, for instance, Eco-Design Directive, which basically set the standard for energy efficiency of certain products like refrigerators or TV sets or laptops, etc. So if somebody wants to sell these products in the EU market, the producer must apply with these regulations. They must meet the conditions. Also, the same regulation applies with Chinese or any third country producers. So if Chinese company wants to sell refrigerators in the EU market, they must follow our regulation. So this piece of legislation and energy labeling policy, which means that if you, for instance, buy a fridge, there is a colorful sticker which shows that how energy efficient the fridge is. So these two pieces of legislation together saves energy as much as what is Italy's annual consumption of energy already now. So, so this kind of market regulation, standardization brings together consumers and businesses, and it creates a level playing field for all companies. So the regulator, public sector, has set the standard or has set the target, and the business is doing a job. So this is something which really opened up my mind and eyes when I was working in Commission. Also, we were developing new legislation which would help to open up waste recycling and waste trade across the borders. Because, for instance, if you compare a barrel of oil, it goes very easily from Rotterdam to whatever part of Europe. So we have a single market for barrel of oil. But try to sell or try to trade 1 tons of plastic waste, it's far more difficult. So plastic waste doesn't have the same market regulations, or it's far more difficult to trade waste as what it is with the barrel of oil. So we were tackling this kind of market barriers to create better market for recycling.
But wouldn't it be a risk for all to also? I mean, we've had a lot of scandals as well around the waste management of the EU, where the waste ends up in Africa or other continents in the world where it's sold from the EU and not recycled or upcycled. So were there gaps in the regulations there, or?
Actually, we didn't have that many regulations in place at all. So that was the reason why our waste was going to third countries. Finally, and I would say gladly, China banned waste import to their continent. So it put more pressure on Europe. We have to deal with our own waste increasingly. So one could turn it around. So we have over production of secondary raw material. Because mostly waste is secondary raw material.
Yes.
And now we have an oversupply of it. So there should be more business models and more business opportunities for new businesses.
So marketing the waste as another raw material would also be needed. And how do you see the world of the potential in the circular public procurement? Is that taken off both in Estonia and Finland right now? Do you see that happening as a way to change the public sector spending?
Well, in Finland, it's slowly taking off, but there is a huge potential because public sector, especially municipalities, are using a huge amount of taxpayers' resources for public procurement. So we could use this tool much more. one of the reasons why it hasn't taken off earlier or in larger extent is that officials in municipalities, for instance, are afraid of doing mistakes in public mm-hmm. procurement procedures. So mm-hmm. they try to tick all the boxes what have to be done when launching a public tender. And mm. if you add new elements to it, there's always a legal risk. So this is something
and might be hard to assess as well, right? How do you assess that the company will also deliver on circularity? Yeah,
exactly. This is also true, but it's not the rocket science. So there is a big potential in this.
Mm. What is that like in Estonia, Tavi? How is the public procurement regulations changing?
Well, it's quite evident that public sector has to lead the way. It's easier for public sector actually to impose new kinds of rules and traditions when it applies them itself. So of course, it has to go that way. For example, I have been working as chairman of the state real estate company. That was quite a bit ago, but what I have seen in the government real estate portfolio, energy consumption is a huge issue that has been dealt with. And again, Finland has actually been a very good role model in this, because already 10 years ago, I kind of guess, Jyrki, it was in your portfolio back then, Senaatti Kiinteistöt, that the Finnish state real estate company, already 10 years ago, they had in one of their buildings that was very impressive. Probably they had this the same thing in many, but I saw it in one that was used by Ministry of Education. They had a screen where there was a man who lived on an iceberg. And this iceberg was melting every time that somebody was using too much energy in the house. So it was a huge building or big building. If you keep the window open, a bit of this iceberg is melting. If you leave the water running, a bit of this iceberg is melting. And it was really like a joint effort of all the civil servants working in this building to keep the man alive. The man had a name. I don't remember the name, but it was personalized. It was very personal to keep him alive by the end of the working day. And since then, we have been following similar examples also in Estonia to making sure that we don't consume more than we absolutely have to. Now I have seen a study of that's really impressive, that a private company put an AI solution to run in one very large government-owned building. They used the AI to run all the building management systems, which all large companies have in today. But AI managed to get as much as 33% of energy saving, even though it already had building management system. It already had state-of-the-art. But if you use, monitor it room by room, and the computer and artificial intelligence can do room by room many times every hour, then there is further things that was achieved. So anything from personal responsibility to using the smartest technology, I do believe that public sector can lead the way. And of course, there are many companies that are voluntarily doing the same, and perhaps in some cases even more. So as you mentioned, it's very, very impressive how many companies have made it their kind of value statement or goal to be carbon neutral. And there are so many cool ways to achieve that. So it's really impressive.
Yeah. So still there are some laggards and some sectors in the economy that I think are more, troublesome. So in from your perspectives, Which are the key goal conflicts? For one thing, it seems a bit hard to make the transition in countries with industries still using or producing fossil assets, right? And how do you see this? How do you manage to get those businesses to understand that the cost of transition versus the cost of inaction and climate crisis, that trade-off has to be addressed, and that the cost of inaction is probably higher So please reflect on these goal conflicts and how to best solve them.
Yeah, if I can start, I would say that first of all, the fair transition is a key, so that people finds that at the same time when they believe that something must be done in order to address climate change, and this something can mean that certain jobs will disappear, the transition must be fair, and here public sector naturally plays a role. So we have to help people to re-educate themselves or find a new job or get social subsidies for transition period or something like this. If we don't manage to get a sense of fairness, then it's very difficult to achieve a systemic change. Second point is that in larger scale, market will take care of those businesses who don't care. And because consumers or other businesses don't want to dirty their hands dealing with kind of products or services which don't fulfill expectations in terms of environmental values. And then we have seen quite interesting news, especially from the Netherlands and from the United States, recent news where the court ruled that, for instance, Royal Dutch Shell must accelerate their effort to reduce their carbon footprint. This is quite extraordinary. And I believe that it will have a larger impact than the one we see in the Netherlands or depending to Shell. Only the other companies and countries will look at the development seriously and with interest. Also in Exxon, the latest annual meeting of Exxon selected two environment, how would I say or describe the persons? They elected two board members whose knowledge is in environmentally responsible business. So the owners of Exxon wanted to change the course of the company, and this is also big news.
That's I think definitely milestones moving forward. How is the discussion in Estonia about these issues, Tavi? The cost of transition versus cost of inaction, and the some of the industries that might be more reluctant to change. How do we approach them?
In a way, it's actually the contrary, that those sectors that have the history of being high polluters are experiencing often the biggest change, because they kind of have to, and there is a lot to change. So, for example, if we take what we have inherited, so to say, from the time of Soviet occupation, the energy production and also some industry that was very much polluting, this has changed dramatically. Even what changed was producing energy from oil shale first was made a lot safer, and now it has been phasing out to, first of all, to make instead of burning the oil shale to make energy, just electricity, you first make oil out of it and then start fading out from the oil business as well. So it takes time, but just to give you an example, Estonian national energy company Eesti Energia, or Estonian Energy, they have reduced the CO2 footprint three times in 3 years, the last three years. Just one example. And of course, alongside with the reducing the energy production from fossil fuels or fossil sources, goes also the increase of renewable production. But also what we have to keep in mind in our latitude is that solar plus wind don't necessarily give us energy security. So, we are connected. Estonia and Finland have two Estlinks energy cables, electricity cables connecting us. Finland has connections to Sweden, Estonia has to Latvia and so forth. But still, if we all depend on only solar and wind, this is not an option. So technologies like hydrogen, for example, to store renewable energy, and other sources need to be there as well. And this is also a discussion that has been very, very important in Estonia, because yes, oil shale energy production has been polluting, but at the same time, this has been super stable in terms of you just turn it all on, you can upscale it, you can downscale it, and it's always there if you need it. Whereas, you know, where there is cold winter night, you might not have wind or sun for that matter.
Mm. That's true, and that also then boils down to what Jyrki was commenting on with a sort of fair transition or safe transition that mm-hmm. people feel that it's done in a holistic way. But thank you. I think these are all, you know, promising signs that things are moving in the right direction and the market is actually changing. Just one comment as well on the Nordic-Baltic collaboration, since you already mentioned here that the countries are connected via things like very tangible as an energy cables, but also in other ways. Any comments on that? What would you see are the main benefits of further Nordic-Baltic collaboration for green transition?
Well, if you look at the map and the global map or the European map, and if you calculate various things like the number of companies who are already changed the business models towards circular. If you look at the level of energy interconnectedness, for instance, this Nordic-Baltic area is overwhelming forerunner comparing the rest of Europe. But even the Europe is not necessarily the right comparison because the market is global. So our region is the most advanced in many respects. And for instance, when we look at Estonia, all of us have a lot to learn from digitalization, not only how public sector has been digitalized, but also how new innovations, Tavi just mentioned about his business, how new businesses are arising based on new technologies and digital opportunities. So, I mean, this is the state of play today.
And so we're like one big lab for the
exactly,
future, maybe,
exactly.
And exchanging those good solutions.
Yeah, and if I was an investor in Asia or in the United States, I would look at this part of the world as a fascinating area to invest in, because there are people and market which are very advanced.
Mm. Tavi, do you share this view? What do you think?
Well, absolutely, and I think that if all countries would be as much focusing on this as Finland, for example, a big part of the problem would already be solved. Mm-hmm. And I think Jyrki should be very proud of what the Sitra has been doing as a kind of early adopter of many like best practices and ideas, and showing the rest of the world the way where to go, how to actually achieve those goals. So, and I also agree that we can be relatively satisfied of what we have achieved in terms of connections, in terms of our own practices. But I think that also takes us to the position where everybody in the world expect even more from us. So. In a way, it's great to be in this particular part of the world, Nordic-Baltic corner of the world or center of the world, if we can put it this way.
I think also, we are in the center.
But it's also fair that we need to push even higher, because everybody else is looking at us, and we can push even higher if we work together and learn from each other. And I think we are doing just that. So we should continue doing that. And thank you very much for the chance to discuss this. Today's talk is also something that exchanges our experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would like to just end then with this other big question, where we talked a lot about the market now, and then we all know that to succeed, we have to have everyone on board. And that's also something that we worked hard on in the Nordic and Baltic states to make this a just green transition. But what do you see with a few examples from your ends when it comes to engagement and calling on people and businesses and the civil society, research, etc., to come together for change. I mean, how could we encourage this essential collaboration, or how could we make it easier for people to change their lifestyle? Because essentially that's all it's about, right? That we start making different choices. And that we can change our workplaces and everything. Do you have any specific? I know in Finland you work a lot with personalized apps, for example, where you can map your own carbon footprint, and you can do those things. And Tavi, you already mentioned from these buildings where people can see day to day how their actions and choices impacted on this iceberg, which was an interesting illustration. So anyway, a few more of those examples just before we end the talk today.
Yeah, I mean, we have very good experiences on providing digital apps on counting carbon footprint. So people can test what is their personal carbon footprint. And they also at the same time give some advices how to reduce it. So one thing which is completely missing at the moment is to do the same to biodiversity. Even though I'm interested in that and Citra is working on that, but I can admit that I don't know enough what I can do in personal level to increase nature or decrease the nature loss. So we need more information, and here companies comes to the picture. If they provide new services, new products, new ways of consuming more responsibly, it's very important and crucial part in this.
And these apps that you mentioned, have they become popular? I mean, it's also one thing to develop things, and then it's the next thing to popularize them and make sure they're useful and usable. How do you see that coming along?
Well, the app which Citra created a couple of years ago, first we thought that we are happy if some 50,000 people would use it. But now the figure is more than 1 million.
Oh,
and
really?
Just, 1 million people have already tested their lifestyle and got advices how to reduce the carbon footprint. And now just last week we got the news that the EU wanted to provide some financing so that it will become the European-wide application.
Wow. Okay.
So it's really popular.
Could be a tool for change then, for sure. Yeah. Tavi, from the Estonian perspective, is it the digital way forward, or how do you see the role of the civil society in this as well, in promoting change?
It actually, what Jyrki just mentioned, this gamification or like getting yourself in this position that it's a kind of goal, like visible goal to reduce your footprint, is actually very, very good idea. It would be something that I would definitely want to try myself as well. But how to get the society focusing on this? I think what we already have achieved, at least in our part of the world, is that early adopters already are very much focusing on that. Those who in every aspect of the life are leading the way. It's definitely there for quite some time already, and this is the best guarantee that it will lead to masses as well. And of course, the second thing, which is to me personally like a big goal setter, is talk to your children. I thought that it is very much my own experience, as my daughter, as I said, is 12 years old and she has a million ideas how to make the world a better place. But also I recently heard that we had a round table on hydrogen and I was told by the CEO of Ale Kokk, a beer maker in Estonia, and he said that he heard from his daughter his daughter pushed how to make the beer production more running fully on renewable or consuming less, let's put it this way. So again, in every aspect of the world, it or the life, it can actually affect if you listen to your children. And I think that's the best advice I can give on this topic. Mm.
Okay, thank you so much. We will try to do that, and also, of course, try to get the more sort of suspicious, or the people who are a bit fearful of change, maybe, or questioning things more. That I guess that those will be the challenge as well, to get those on board. But children have a lot of impact, and then together with research and businesses and others, things could probably happen. So I leave this discussion with these points, and I want to thank you so much, both of you, for participating today, and thank all of you who are listening to this podcast titled Economy in Green Transition. And it's part of the podcast series Nordic Sustainable Economy that was delivered by the Nordic Council of Ministers. And every month, a new podcast with Nordic and Estonian guests will be released. And you'll find it on SoundCloud or Äripäivä Radio. And excuse my limited Estonian. Thank you so much for today. My name is Åsa. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Nordic Sustainable Economy Podcast Series, delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers.